Constitution says that three branches of government are co-equal, but in point of fact, in reality, the judiciary has emerged as the top branch in terms of, you know, being able to rule on everything, whether the other people are, you know, are justified or not, and nobody disputes it. I think the worst case was probably Bush v. Gore, where, you know, they just chose the winner because he might be hurt if he doesn't win. And then said, you can't use this as a basis for any other decision because they knew it was so corrupt. But now after 40 years, the right wing has managed to really pack the Supreme Court with extreme conservative Catholics, even Catholics support abortion majority. And now that within just, what, a few weeks, they passed three decisions that are so radical. I mean, you know, basically allowing everybody to destroy abortion, every state that wants to, and maybe now the federal government if the Republicans take power, and then that Biden can't regulate vaccines. Well, this thing was 0.3% fatal COVID. If something is, you know, 3% or 5%, it would pretty much shatter civilization. And if the president can't regulate, you know, vaccines and masks and things, you know, we're really lost. And I forget the third one, but it was also equally insane. What do you think of the whole contention that this Supreme Court is illegitimate because it's been really packed by a small subset of people that are completely ignoring 70-75% majorities in America, you know, ruling against them and really hurting and going to kill thousands of people, I think, you know, just in abortions. Maybe you could talk about the history. I know the only cases of really defying the Supreme Court, I think, are Jackson, and that's a bad one. But you know, the other kind of things where courts were just overruled or ignored by legislatures and executives.
Well, let me answer by being descriptive. So the first thing you said was that no one would dispute that the court is now the most powerful branch. And there's some bipartisan agreement on that score, and I think we can say that certainly the court is playing a much more vigorous role than the framers anticipated, because they thought it would be the least dangerous branch because it had neither purse nor sword. And they thought, this is Madison and Marshall, thought that each of the three branches should have equal responsibility for interpreting the Constitution, that the court shouldn't be the only constitutional branch. And there's also no question that the court, again being descriptive, is striking down many more federal laws than it did through most of American history. During the first 100 years of America, there were only two federal laws struck down between 1803 and 1857 in Marbury and Dred Scott. By contrast, between 95 and 2006, something like 27 federal laws, the numbers rise a lot. So it's definitely much more active. Whether that's a good or bad idea will depend on what you think of the merits of the decisions. And then you say, well, some people say the court is illegitimate because of the appointment process and Merrick Garland and the vagaries of vacancies, which have, and Bush v. Gore and so forth. Well, there are arguments along those lines, and there were similar arguments against the legitimacy of the court in the election of 1800, when after the midnight judges, you know, Adams assigning the commissions at the last minute, the outgoing Federalists canceled the Supreme Court term and then reduced the size of the court to prevent Jefferson from making any appointments. And then once Jefferson gets in, he repeals the act and makes the appointments. And the same thing happened over after the Civil War. So it's true that at really hotly contested times in American history, like 1800 and the Civil War, and today, there have been substantial numbers of Americans who think the court is either wrong or illegitimate and have tried to change its size. We also saw that with the court packing attempt in the 30s. This time around, there are not votes to court pack, so it's not going to happen. Idea or not, it would require a filibuster-proof majority, and Congress doesn't have that. And then finally, you raise important questions about legitimacy, and it gets back to Justice Kagan and Breyer. And, you know, Justice Kagan agrees with those who say that the court suffered a self-inflicted wound in the Dobbs case and called its legitimacy into question when it appeared to be changing the law because the composition of the court changed. This is just in the Dobbs dissent. I'm not endorsing or arguing against it. I'm just telling you what she said. She said that the whole point of respecting precedent is so that the law doesn't appear to change when the composition of the court changes. And when it does, and here it's happening really fast, she said, and Justice Sotomayor has echoed that charge, this is a majority in a hurry, said Justice Sotomayor, then the stench of illegitimacy will hang over the court, as Justice Sotomayor said. So you are, your points are fully endorsed by the dissenters on the Supreme Court. Now, you said that's leading some people to say we're not going to obey the court. Justices Kagan and Sotomayor have not said that. Justice Breyer at the Constitution Center explicitly rejected that claim. He said that whether you agree with these decisions or not, and even if you think the court is calling its legitimacy into question, you've got to obey the decisions. Because if you don't, we have no rule of law. And if we have no rule of law, then we have lost our Constitution and our freedom. So that's Justice Breyer's position. I think that may be shared by dissenting justices too, who certainly are not urging people in their dissents to take to the streets and to take the law into their own hands. So it kind of brings us back to just, is the Constitution going to bind us? And the Constitution is a rule of decision. It says the Supreme Court can interpret the law. And therefore, under our system, if you disagree with the court, you have to find other grounds for protesting its decisions or seeking constitutional change, which in the case of abortion right now, generally involve activism at the state level, because that's what our system sets up. About corruption. It's amazing how much they talked about corruption, because they're afraid that a foreign king is going to bribe an emissary who's going to come and become a demagogue and take over America, like Aaron Burr. And they're very keen. That's why they don't. That's why you have to be a natural born citizen, because they're partly afraid of people coming over and being third party agents, third column agents.
Donald Trump's trip to Moscow in 78.
But also, I'm just being historical here.
A quick question about what a hypothetical. What if Biden allowed abortions on all military federal bases?
Thank you, sir.
And the Supreme Court, strikes it down.
Backing up.
Sorry.
I know you're running, yeah. And I'll follow up so we can be in touch about Ghana and about a whole bunch of other things. Great to be with you.
Thanks, Legat.
And the Supreme Court strikes it down, like legal abortions on all military bases, federal military bases, and Biden just kind of ignores it. I was wondering.
Yeah. No, we're fine. I was just trying to do two at once. I got too excited. I know, I feel bad.
Well, what is the history of the executive and legislative branches just winning against, Supreme Court decision in terms of, like, neo-defying it? But that happened during Roosevelt's time, too.
Yeah.
He actually won the court-packing thing because the Supreme Court backed off on all of those really extreme things that it's saying.
That's a good question. I think generally the court hasn't forced the issue. Marshall backed away and didn't demand the subpoena be enforced against Marbury. And I guess Cooper v. Aaron is the big time when the court was really scared, when it thinks that Faubus won't desegregate the schools and the justices all sign the decision. But Eisenhower supports the court there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, there actually are not a bunch of... There's John Marshall, supposedly saying the court's made his decision, Marshall's made his decision, let him enforce it with the Cherokee Indians, but Jackson did in the end acknowledge Marshall's authority. So I think the answer is there's never been a real standoff because the court really hasn't forced the issue. The steel mills and the Nixon tapes, I mean, those are all cases where the president acquiesced. And
mm-hmm.
if the president hadn't acquiesced, like if Nixon or Truman had said we're not going to obey this,
I don't
that would have been a crisis.
I don't think Biden's going to do this.
No.